Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
A Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan. Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, good morning and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, May 31st. I cannot believe it's the last day of May. Hope you're doing okay. Hope you're staying positive, staying safe, staying well, staying active. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers Insurance for auto, home, and business. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Well, this morning, as you could hear from that music, oh, I'm so excited. I have a treat for you, all you golfers who also love music and enjoyed the progressive rock band Rush. And, you know, their music is timeless. Well, anyway, Alex Lifeson, the guitarist for Rush, he's a passionate golfer. And Alex will join us this morning at 7:40. You know, I love the fact that golf crosses into so many areas of life. Sports stars love golf, as you saw last Sunday with the Match Champions for Charity. And we'll talk about that in a second. Hollywood stars love golf. And so do musicians. And, you know, through the years, I've had the opportunity to interview and play golf with people like Celine Dion, Alice Cooper, Kenny G, Vince Gill, Amy Grant, Anne Murray, actors like Matthew McConaughey, Samuel L. Jackson, Joe Pesci, Kevin Costner, Sylvester Stallone, to name a few. They're all passionate golfers. And I met Alex Lifeson at Robbie Krieger's charity tournament in California a few years ago. And it just fascinates me that golf truly challenges everyone, including one of the greatest guitarists on the planet. I mean, look how the great Tom Brady was humbled by the game last Sunday. He really struggled most of the day, aside from hitting the best shot of the match, holing out from the fairway. But anyway, the band Rush is really the quintessential thinking man's band. Their lyrics are deep. Rush fans will say many of their songs help them get through a lot of challenging times in their lives. For instance, Subdivisions spoke to the unpopular student during their awkward school years. Manhattan Project is about the World War II project that created the first atomic bomb. As the late Neil Peart explained, and may the iconic Rush drummer rest in peace, he passed away from cancer this past January, but he wrote that their song The Pass was about the tragic thing if someone takes their own life, but let's not pretend it's a hero's end. It's not a triumph. It's not a heroic epic, end quote. So actually, in preparing for this interview, I went back and listened to many of their songs, and their lyrics are very deep, very thoughtful. And they were really genius musicians, and they brought an intensity to the stage every time they performed. And this morning, I'll connect with their guitarist, Alex Lifeson, and get his insight on what he brings from his Hall of Fame musical career to his golf game, and much more. Very excited. And in a few minutes at 7:20, we're going to hear about the Symetra Tour, the road to the LPGA, with Mike Nichols. He's the Chief Business Officer for the Symetra Tour. Now, the Symetra Tour is the official qualifying tour of the LPGA, and their mission is to prepare the world's best young women professional golfers from all over the world for a successful career on the LPGA Tour. So if you ever wondered what the process is to qualify for the LPGA Tour, Mike will be able to give us some insight on what goes into that. All right, so last Sunday's The Match, Champions for Charity, on Turner Sports was the most watched golf telecast on cable. It drew an average of 5.8 million viewers. And from 5:45 to 6 p.m., the event peaked at 6.3 million viewers. I mean, I loved everything about this telecast. 3+ hours. It was so much fun. There were some hilarious moments. It really was incredible live TV. The weather was terrible, but despite the weather, it was unbelievable. Tiger Woods and Peyton Manning, they ended up beating Phil Mickelson and Tom Brady one up. With Mickelson and Brady rallying back, they were three down most of the day. But the match was so much more than, you know, the end result. And I really want to congratulate everyone involved in putting this together and to Turner Sports for thinking outside the box, you know, from a production standpoint. They mic'd each of the players. They put cameras in each of the golf carts. And the bantering among the players and the TV crew, you know, with the players, it was just hilarious. And the best part, they raised an incredible $20 million for COVID-19 charities. So I'm sure most of you watched this match a week ago. But if you didn't, I mean, some of my highlights, well, on the range, it started out, Peyton Manning was warming up right next to Tom Brady. It was pouring. And he was asked if he could pick a caddy, who would it be? And Manning, who has that kind of down home, you know, sense of humor, he looked at Brady and he said he thought he would pick Bill Belichick as his caddy. And Justin Thomas at one point asked Phil what he was thinking before he hit a pitch shot, and Phil proceeded to give this incredible lesson on pitching. It was just great stuff. Another hilarious moment from Tiger came when Phil, before he hit a shot about 150 yards out, asked Tiger to go up and mark his ball, which was already on the green. And Tiger said, "You want me to use one of my U.S. Open medals as a marker?" Obviously a dig at Phil. Here's how that played out.
"I've seen Phil do some odd things before, but having Tito mark that ball has got
to
be up there.
You want me to use one of my U.S. Open medals?
Do you have one?
Huh?
Do you have any? I got some silver ones. Do you have any of the gold ones? Either one will work.
I should have three of my
right,
can borrow.
Let me have it over."
Well, Tiger's won, you know, a couple U.S. Open titles. Phil's not won any, but has been runner-up at the U.S. Open six times. Anyway, Charles Barkley got Tiger to answer some questions about how he's feeling, which was good, and what he's been doing during the pandemic. Tiger said it's been nice to be home. He's been able to train every day, get some treatment. He said he was trying to peak for Augusta, obviously, back in April, get ready, and all of a sudden, with this pandemic, he said that they've been very careful. They've been staying at home. He said he's spent a lot of time with the kids and he's playing a lot of tennis, which is fun. All right. And then Barkley asked Tiger about his thoughts on the condensed tour schedule. And Tiger is saying it's going to be interesting to see what happens, that the schedule has all changed and everything's fluid and on the fly. And then Peyton Manning interrupted and asked Tiger to read his putt on the sixth green. So Tiger told Barkley that Manning is a hell of a lot more important than he is. And he goes up to the green to help Manning read his putt. And then Manning proceeds to drain the putt for a net birdie. I mean, it was funny to watch Tiger just service Manning's caddy. And Tiger looked really good. He hasn't played a competition since his own tournament, the Genesis Invitational in February. He pulled out of all those tournaments in Florida, the Florida Swing, the month of March, due to back stiffness. So we really had no idea what to expect from Tiger. But last Sunday, he looked good. He was driving the ball beautifully. He hit 14 fairways. His iron game looked good. He looked pretty good on the greens. And he did not look like he was in any pain despite, you know, the weather, the continuous rain and the terrible conditions. Peyton Manning, he looked real solid out there, I have to say. I was impressed with Peyton Manning. Tom Brady, however, I mean, gosh, he struggled big time at the beginning. His tee shots, they went left, right, all over the place. He clearly looked upset with himself. By the fourth hole, Barkley had said he'd donate $50,000 to charity if Brady could hit the green, but Brady hit the trees on the right. Then Barkley said, well, he should have said if he kept it on the planet. Then Brooks Koepka tweeted that he'd donate $100,000 if Brady could par a hole on the front nine. Now, Brady is hearing all of this in his earphones while he's trying to hold himself together. And so we're seeing Tom Brady on the golf course looking human, really, for the first time ever. Every golfer on the planet can relate to what he may have been feeling when you just don't have it that day. You don't have it that moment. And here's six-time Super Bowl winner Tom Brady, completely debilitated by the sport, in front of a global audience, in front of Peyton Manning, in front of Tiger, in front of his partner Phil Mickelson. And just when you thought it couldn't get any worse on the golf course for Tom Brady, on the par 5, 515-yard hole, Brady holds it from over 100 yards out. It was an incredible shot. His ball lands on the green. It bounces twice, rolls into the hole. It was the best shot of the match. Here's how Brady's dialogue with Charles Barkley transpired.
Oh, yeah. Oh, go in!
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness!
Oh, you made it!
Wow!
Oh. Take a second, Ed. Show it to me. Wow!
Hey, yeah. hey,
Chet.
Hey, man.
Chet.
I got that's
Chet.
Awesome.
Shut your mouth, Chet.
Unreal.
Take a little of that medicine. Get your butt out of here.
Hey.
Wow.
That's what I needed.
Hey. It back in the hole.
Hey, way to get $100,000 for Brooks Koepka.
What a
thanks,
tasty
baby.
Mortal
Brooks, take
wow.
Brooks, how about that?
It was classic. The great Tom Brady coming from behind to make the shot of the day. And it turned out it was only a birdie for Brady and Mickelson, as they only have that hole because Tiger birdied the hole as well, just missing an eagle putt. Then Brady splits his pants, taking the ball out of the cup, and he had to put on his rain pants. You just can't make this stuff up. And another highlight, Mickelson driving the green on the par 4 11th hole, 330 yards. Mickelson drives the green. Brady sinks the eagle putt from about 30 feet out. So Brady came back and actually felt a lot better after that hole out on the fairway and that eagle putt. So as you can tell, I really enjoyed this match. It was just a pleasure to watch it. It was amazing. All right. Let's look at some of the other top stories in golf. The John Deere Classic, scheduled for July 9 through 12 in Illinois, has been canceled. It would have been the fifth event back on the revised PGA Tour schedule. It will return next year. Spokespeople for the PGA Tour cited ongoing local and state-related challenges relating to gathering restrictions. That's too bad. The PGA Tour resumes play on June 11th at Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth, Texas, and that will be the beginning of 25 straight weeks of tournament golf. So far, the top five players in the world have committed to play. Rory McIlroy, Jon Rahm, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, and Dustin Johnson. They are all committed to play. Patrick Reed, Webb Simpson, Xander Schauffele, Tony Finau, and Shane Lowry have all committed to play as well. So interesting about Lowry. If he's coming over from Ireland, he's had to have been here for 2 weeks to quarantine before he can play in this tournament. Tiger Woods has not committed to playing this first event. Kevin Na is the defending champion, and Adam Scott and Tommy Fleetwood have said a few weeks ago that it would be unlikely for them to fly over here, quarantine for 2 weeks. They would take a wait-and-see approach. The players who are playing in Fort Worth should be conducting home tests about now for the coronavirus before they head to Texas. The testing at home consists of taking saliva samples, and they have to be supervised by a physician during a video call, apparently, and then mail to a laboratory for testing. Then once they get to Fort Worth, they are going to be tested again. All right, and finally, Forbes came out with their annual listing of athletes who have earned the most money. Four golfers cracked the top 100. Three in the top 25. Tiger Woods is number 8 on the list. He made $62.3 million last year. $60 million of that coming from endorsements. And the article said that since 1996, when Tiger turned pro, he has earned $1.5 billion from endorsements, appearances, and course design fees. Rory McIlroy was 14th on the list, netting $52 million last year, $30 million from endorsements. And don't forget, you know, when he won the Tour Championship in the FedEx Cup, he won $15 million right there. Phil Mickelson was 25 on the Forbes list of top earners as far as athletes go. Mickelson earned $800,000 from playing last year, but pulled in $40 million from endorsements. And overall, Mickelson has made $750 million from endorsements through the years. Incredible. Jordan Spieth, he's on the list at number 52, despite the fact that he had a poor season last year. $26 million out of $27.6 million last year for Spieth came from endorsements. His Under Armour deal is huge. And who's at the very top of the list? None other than Roger Federer. He made $106.3 mil last year, with $100 million of that coming from tournaments. All right, we're going to take a quick break, come back, learn about the Symetra Tour with their chief business officer, Mike Nichols. And then all you Rush fans, music fans, golf fans, Alex Lifeson, guitarist from Rush and most passionate golfer, he'll join us at 7:40. We'll be right back.
At Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're giving personal auto insurance customers a 15% credit on their April and May premiums and providing billing relief to all customers affected by COVID-19. It's also why we're pledging $5 million in relief efforts to help our communities. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. To learn more, please visit travelers.com. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan, Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori. It looks gorgeous outside. Hope you have a tee time. And joining me now, Mike Nichols, the Chief Business Officer for the Symetra Tour, which is the road to the LPGA Tour, the official qualifying tour of the LPGA. Good morning, Mike. Welcome.
Thanks, Ann. It's great to be on with you. I have to say that this may be the pinnacle of my professional career for a kid who grew up in northern New Jersey and Basking Ridge, went to high school at Delbarton School in Morristown, and then got my professional starting golf at the United States Golf Association in Far Hills to be on the flagship station of the Yankees and Giants, my two favorite teams, is quite a thrill. So thanks for having me on.
Oh, our pleasure. It's great to talk to you. And well, tell us about the Symetra Tour. It's somewhat like the minor leagues in baseball, right? The PGA Tour has the Corn Ferry Tour, and the LPGA Tour has the Symetra Tour.
Correct. The analogy that we often use is that we are the LPGA's Corn Ferry Tour. So we'll play in a normal season, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about abnormal seasons here in a second, but you know, we'll play anywhere from 20 to 23 times across the United States, so we're domestic tour exclusively. We have players from 40 countries, and then it's pretty simple. At the end of our season, the top 10 players on our money list will graduate straight onto the LPGA Tour. So, you know, for people who follow golf and sort of wonder, you know, how does somebody ever get to be a professional on the LPGA Tour? There's really three ways. They can either be invited or Monday qualify into a golf tournament and win, and then they can become a member immediately. They can go through what people are familiar with as the Q School. So we have our Q School, which has multiple levels. So if you were a golfer, you know, just coming out of college and wanting to go, you could go through the Q School process. And then there's the Symetra Tour, finishing in the top 10 on the Symetra Tour. So those are really the main three ways that somebody can get onto the LPGA Tour. And we feel that, you know, seeing a player play over the course of 20-plus tournaments and getting those tournament reps and getting that experience, we feel we're identifying that next sort of generation of top talent that's going to be successful when they get to the LPGA Tour.
So, Mike, so players don't necessarily have to be on the Symetra Tour to get into the LPGA.
That's true. They could, like I said, there are some instances where players had a sponsor exemption and won the tournament. Some recent ones that come to mind are like Lexi Thompson and Brooke Henderson both won tournaments they were invited to, so they immediately received membership. The Q School is three different tournaments. So there's one stage that we have in California, then we have a second stage that's in Florida traditionally. And then our final stage of Q Series the last couple years has been held in North Carolina. So for somebody who is coming out of college with no, or anywhere around the world, frankly, is coming to play professional golf, comes from being an amateur, wants to turn professional, they could go through those four stages and get onto the LPGA. Now, if you don't quite make it out of that four stage onto the LPGA, the Symetra Tour takes a group of our players who qualify from the Symetra Tour from that Q Series. So it's a little sort of inside baseball there of the mechanics of how it all works. But again, you know, when you look at the Symetra Tour playing 20 times versus the Q School where there's just sort of four individual tournaments, we feel that playing an entire season on the Symetra Tour helps identify the players that are going to be the best over a sustained LPGA season.
So there probably is a large percentage of players who may never make that leap onto the LPGA Tour, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when you think about it, I often say to people, like, if you actually thought about what it takes to become a professional golfer and be one of the top 144 that tees it up on in any given weekend on a tour from around the world, you'd never even start the process. I mean, I use the analogy of, you know, professional football. If you think about the NFL and how incredible of an athlete you have to be to make it onto an NFL roster, and when you consider that there's, you know, 32 teams, and by the time you go through injuries and, you know, the practice rosters and all that stuff, you probably have about 2,000 guys a year who are NFL players, 2,000, and they're all primarily fed by one country. So you got 2,000 guys who are making up NFL rosters. On any given week on the LPGA Tour, we have 144 ladies teeing up, and they're coming from 40 or more countries from around the world. So how elite you have to be playing on the LPGA Tour week in and week out is just incredible. We've got some of the world's best athletes for sure.
And can they play on the Symetra Tour as long as they want if they don't, you know, qualify for the LPGA?
So a player who is on the Symetra Tour can play for as long as she maintains her status. So from year to year, if she is able to stay in the top 80 on the Symetra Tour money list, she'll be able to stay on the tour for as long as she wants. So there's no time limit. We have players who it's taken half a dozen years or so. There's a player, Mo Martin, who's kind of one of the players that we look to. And she played on our tour for somewhere between 5 and 6 years, and a player who you might think, hey, Mo, maybe it's, you know, time to look for something else to do. But she always made enough money to kind of just keep fueling the dream. And, you know, a couple years after graduating from the Symetra Tour, she won the AIG Women's British Open, one of our majors on the LPGA. So there's no sort of time limit. They're not sort of timed off of the tour, but it takes different times. Not everybody's Lexi Thompson or Brooke Henderson, who's, you know, a world beater at, 17 or 18 years old. So it takes time for folks, but that's one of the things, frankly, we've tried to focus on with the Symetra Tour, is trying to make it a little bit more affordable for players to be able to do it for a longer period of time so that money's not the reason that they eventually quit playing.
So what's a prize money like? I mean, can they make a living if they, you know, finish maybe in the top 10 at these events?
Yes. So a player on our tour, so our purses range anywhere from about $125,000 up to $250,000 this year. So the player who wins makes 15% of that purse. So it can be, you know, somewhere from $18,000 up to about $30,000 for winning a tournament, which is a nice paycheck. But traveling the country is certainly not inexpensive. We tried to build a schedule where the players are able to drive from place to place. A lot of the communities in which we stay, we're grateful that people who live in those communities will open their homes to our players so that they can stay in their homes and not incur the cost of hotels. And in some cases, the families will cook meals with the players and help them on those expenses. But, you know, we do have some top players who've last couple of years, the top players on our tour make in excess of $100,000 a year, which, you know, isn't a ton of money when you got to incur all the expenses of traveling the country. But, you know, at the same time, it's ultimately the goal of playing on this tour. The reason to play on this tour is to ultimately get to the LPGA Tour. So if we can keep those top players playing and have enough money to come back year after year, those are the ones that we're really trying to groom for success on the LPGA.
And so how has the tour schedule been altered during the pandemic?
Well, like every tour, there's been an incredible number of cancellations. And, you know, for obvious reasons, you know, we were actually, we had played one tournament here in Florida before it all sort of hit. And it was sort of hanging in the balance. Our next tournaments were scheduled to be out in California, and it was sort of hanging in the balance. And it was looking like we were going to play those events in sort of that late March timeframe. And we even spoke to the mayor of one of those communities who was all gung-ho about us coming, even though the governor was starting to sort of put the clamps down a little bit there in California. And then all of a sudden, you know, all of the closings came. And it's, you know, it's hard to work within those restrictions when you have all of the, you know, the players, obviously, and the volunteers and the caddies and all the staff that make it go. It sometimes becomes so limiting to have to work around all of the state and local restrictions. But, you know, I think as you referenced at the top of the show, hopefully the PGA Tour will be opening up here in a couple of weeks, obviously without fans. But, you know, we're hoping that we can get to sort of back a sense of normalcy with some other sports returning, that by the time we come back with the Symmetra Tour, it'll just be sort of a blip on the radar. Nobody will sort of notice, because hopefully a lot of the other sporting events will have come back.
So now you're also the lead LPGA liaison to the Ladies European Tour. And I know there's a joint venture now with the LPGA. That's a recent thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when the LET, by probably their own admission, has been struggling the last number of years. And as Commissioner Mike Wan likes to say, you know, whenever he talks to the founders, you know, they say, you know, whatever we can do as the LPGA to help grow women's golf. And it's not just grow women's golf in the United States, it's around the world. So we were able to partner with the Ladies European Tour. It's a 50-50 joint venture between the two entities. And the idea is that we would go ahead and bolster the LET schedule. We actually grew this year's schedule by 9 events from what it was the previous year. So we were scheduled to play over, I believe it was 24 times this year on the Ladies European Tour. So it was really going to be an incredible season that we had put together in partnership with them for the players. And the longer term goal is that, to the way players qualify for the LPGA Tour, there's never been sort of an official pipeline from the Ladies European Tour to the LPGA. We have a lot of great European players that have come from the European Tour, but they've come either through the Symmetra Tour or through the qualifying school, or, for example, in Annika Sörenstam's case, winning the U.S. Women's Open all those years ago. So it's quite a thing where that we've been able to partner in a way that makes women's golf stronger around the world, and then hopefully in time create an official pipeline for those players directly to the LPGA, much like we have here on the Symmetra Tour.
You know, it's great to see the growth of the Symmetra Tour. And, you know, the LPGA has just grown tremendously in terms of sponsorships, prize money for the players, the number of tournaments all over the world. And Commissioner Wan has done an incredible job, right? He's been there for 10 years, I think.
Yep, he's been here for just over 10 years, starting in 2010. So it's been a pleasure working with and for him for the last, you know, as long as he's been with the tour. Just a, you know, great leader, instills great sort of loyalty both inside the building and outside of the building in terms of his ability to speak to sponsors. You know, he always talks about the fact that, you know, prior to joining the LPGA, he was in the sponsor's chair. And so whenever we're talking about growing, whether it's the Symmetra Tour or LPGA Tour, he's always, you know, coaching us on, you know, let's think about what the check writers, what is it that the check writer wants to hear? So, you know, we're really focused right now. There's so much attention being built right now around women's empowerment and diversity inclusion, and finding ways to sort of empower, whether it's young girls or women in business. And so the LPGA has sort of become a platform around which businesses can show their sort of living their values of, you know, that we, here's what we're saying and here's how we're demonstrating it is by supporting women's sports. And the LPGA is the longest running independent women's sports association. We've been around for, this is our 70th year. And, you know, it's obviously we're proud of what we've built, especially in the last 10 years with Mike at the helm.
Mike, can these tours survive this pandemic and get back to where they're, thriving again?
Well, I think so. I think people will be pleasantly surprised when they see what the 2021 LPGA and Symetra Tour schedules look like. You know, it's, you know, the 2020 schedule, it's going to be one of those where whether it's, you know, LPGA, PGA Tour, Symetra Tour, they're going to be sort of an asterisk in the history books. And, you know, ultimately, you know, what we can play, and what we can't. But, you know, the organizations that come out in next year and in the years beyond stronger than possibly we went into 2020, that's how we anticipate both the Symetra Tour and LPGA Tour coming out. And I think that just sort of speaks to the resiliency and the plan that Mike Wan has put in place, because he said, you know, let's just make sure to get through 2020. And make sure that 2020 isn't a drag on 2021. So I think people will be pleasantly surprised when they see what we have in store for next year on both the LPGA and Symetra tours.
Well, I'm pulling for both tours, Mike. Thank you so much for being on the show. Continued success.
Thanks, Anna. We look forward to teeing it up when you're back down here in Florida.
Would love it. Thank you so much. Mike Nichols, Chief Business Officer for the Symetra Tour. Very informative stuff. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And my next guest is one of the greatest guitar players in history, Alex Lifeson. We'll be back in a moment.
At Travelers, we never lose sight of our promise to take care of our customers and communities. That's why we're giving personal auto insurance customers a 15% credit on their April and May premiums and providing billing relief to all customers affected by COVID-19. It's also why we're pledging $5 million in relief efforts to help our communities. For over 160 years, Travelers has been helping protect the people we serve. To learn more, please visit travelers.com. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan, Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
Well, welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this gorgeous Sunday morning. And if that music doesn't get you going, I don't know what will. Alex Lifeson, legendary guitarist for Rush, joins me now. Alex, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Ann. It's nice to be back.
It's good to talk with you, man. Just legendary guitarist. Such an honor, really. And, of course, golf connected us in the first place. We met at Robbie Krieger's tournament, Scotty Medlock's charity tournament,
right,
in
yeah.
California.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, still in touch with those guys all the time. Actually, I probably talk to Scotty once a month.
Oh, I love it. Scotty, yeah. what an artist, what a talent he is. I got to get Scotty on the show.
Yeah, but, very sweet guy, too.
You know, it's so refreshing to see how so many musicians have a passion for golf. You, Alice Cooper, Robbie, the late Glenn Frey, Kenny G, Justin Timberlake, Vince Gill.
Sure.
What about the game attracts the musician in you, Alex?
You know, a lot of it has to do with just being engaged on the road. Being on the road, I mean, it seems like a glamorous thing, and it is very unique and interesting and fun, but it's also really... it's depressing at times, and you just feel like you're locked into your hotel room until you actually go to the gig. So golf became an escape for me, certainly. And some days I would play two rounds, have lunch in between, and make it a full day. And it just gets you out of your room and into an environment that's healthy and clear. You meet a lot of nice people, and you're outside swinging a club. You're getting some exercise. You're getting some sunshine. All of those things are really important when you're, you know, trapped inside a hotel room.
So you would bring your clubs everywhere?
Oh, I bring my clubs everywhere, including up to my hotel room every night, and I would chip in the morning on the carpet, or I put a couple pillows up and hit some.
I love it.
One time, I forget where it was, there were a few of us, and we were sort of trap, the weather was crappy. We pulled the mattresses off the beds and put them up against the window and just, you know, hit driver into the into these mattresses. So, I mean, low drivers, of course.
I love that that image. I can just see you guys knocking these balls into mattresses. I'm sure the hotel loved that.
I don't think they ever quite found out about it. But
well, can you make any comparisons at all, like the technique of mastering the electric and acoustic guitar to the challenge of learning golf, maybe to hit a chip shot or an iron shot?
You know, people say tempo is such an important thing, and they automatically assume that as a musician you have a better sense of tempo than say, the layman. But I find that the things that work with me and don't work with me, my wrists tend to be quite supple from playing the way I play. And most guitarists are like that. So when I hold on a club, I'm a little too loose in my wrists, I feel. I'd like to have a better solid feel as I take the club back. Maybe I'm making that up as an excuse for my crappy shot, but that's something that I've kind of wondered about. Tempo is so important. You know, you finish your swing with the right tempo. You make your turn, everything. If you're too fast, your arms go forward and you start casting and all of these things. But it's a really hard thing to do. Even when you have a normal sense of musical tempo, it's really hard to get that, just that right kind of speed to the swing. And that's always a work in progress for me.
Well, it sounds like, you know, you guys are all perfectionists as musicians. I mean, Rush was just a genius. And how does that carry over to your golf game? Do you feel like you're almost too much a perfectionist on the golf course?
Yeah, I would say sometimes it's a bit of a curse. Every shot has to be perfect. And I think a lot of golfers put this pressure on them. And it takes the fun out of the game. It becomes a little too serious. It's easy to get angry at yourself or at the game or at your ball or at your clubs, because it's always your ball or your clubs. It's never you. And it's just that kind of a crazy game that you just want to be perfect. You want to be as good as you can every round that you play. And once you start taking the pressure off, and I'm sure many golfers have found this, those rounds where you score really, really well usually are those rounds where you're not even thinking about what you're doing. You just kind of go out and play. You don't have any expectations. And, you know, you hit the ball great, and you score great, and you putt great. Everything's happening. So you know that it's inside you somewhere to pull out. Like the pros, they need to do that every time they play, every time they practice, every time they address a golf ball. They have to be perfect.
So. Was that cruise control similar to when you get in a zone like that on the golf course? Is that similar to perhaps how you were on stage?
Absolutely. There's a correlation there for sure. Your best nights are the nights where you're not even aware of your playing. You're looking out at the crowd, and it's like your mind is floating. It's not like you're paying attention to something else. Your mind just kind of floats, and the only thing you're aware of is getting out of the way of what you're doing. And perhaps that's the way the pro golfers are, or any professional athlete operates. I mean, I watched The Last Dance last week, and it was so fascinating to watch Michael Jordan. I forgot how amazing he was, how he could move and switch and in midair in a millisecond. It looks great, slow motion. It looks like it was all planned, but wow, to have that kind of skill and foresight and connection with your body and your head, that's amazing.
Yeah, it was like choreographed. It's just something of beauty, really.
Yeah, and certainly Tiger was that. So many great golfers have that ability.
Well, I know you taught yourself how to play guitar when you were 12. What about golf? When and how did you get started in golf?
I was a late comer to golf. I mean, when we were kids, we played hockey a lot on the street, and I remember John, who was our original drummer, had his dad had some golf clubs, and we would take some of those clubs out and just knock a ball around every once in a while. And I caddied when I was 11 or so, at a local. I remember I got 75 cents and a Coke for for working the whole round. Geez, I lost the train of thought here.
Just when you started.
Yeah, so I started when I was 37. I was a very late bloomer. I didn't think golf was that interesting a game. I didn't really watch it. You know, I'd watch the majors if I happened to be in front of a TV, but I was never really into golf. I was into a lot of other things. And then I went on my 37th birthday to a local driving range, and just on a whim, you know, got a few buckets of balls and hit some balls. Oh, my God, I was addicted at that moment. My hands were bleeding. I came back the next day and bought a set of clubs at this public facility. A month later, I joined this big, fancy, schmancy golf club, and then I bought three sets of clubs, and then I never looked back after that. In fact, I guess it was 14 years ago, I got involved in Coppenwood, which is a Tom Fazio, the first Tom Fazio golf club here in Canada, as one of the members. There were as one of the owners, there were seven of us that put this the club together. We were dissatisfied with the club that we were at and thought, let's build our own place that's going to be amazing and we won't have these complaints. And that's what we ended up doing.
I love that. Just build your own course.
Well, it was a little more complicated than that. And it's a great way to lose a lot of money fast.
Right.
That's what I really learned about it. But
I know Celine Dion told me I had the opportunity to golf with her years ago for my show on the Golf Channel. And she and her husband, Renee, they bought Le Mirage in Montreal. Golf course because they wanted their own private club. They didn't want to, you know, wait for tee times.
So they
bought their own golf course.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really enjoyed watching the documentary on Rush, Beyond the Lighted Stage. You and Geddy Lee and Neil Peart all grew up in Canada from humble beginnings. And, you know, the amazing thing is you all stay together for over 40 years. And that doesn't happen in the world of rock and roll too often.
Oh, that doesn't happen in the world, period.
Exactly.
You know, we, from the beginning, well, Geddy and I were friends from junior high school, and we had such a love of music. We would jam, you know, after school, I'd go to his place or he'd come to mine, and we would jam for a couple hours almost every day. And it was a dream of any adolescent male to join a rock band and you know, pick up chicks and this whole thing. But for us, the music was so important, and it was really about becoming a good musician and the best at what you do. And we started early with that, and that was the underlying reason for what we were doing. And when Neil joined the band, he was so skilled, even at that early stage, that it was inspiring to Geddy and me, and we just kind of moved as a unit. We also shared a very similar sense of humor. So the time that we spent together when we weren't focused on music was like being with your very best friends all the time. And then you got to travel and see this other world and live this experience that you only ever dreamed about. And you got to do it together with guys that you really loved. So it was a no-brainer really for us. We were really, really fortunate because I know lots of bands that imploded. The guys just couldn't stand each other after a while, or there was competition or jealousy over who wrote what song and who made what money and all of that stuff. We were always very democratic in the way we ran things. If it wasn't a unanimous decision doing something, we didn't do it. If there was a royalty payment because someone wrote something, the whole band shared in it. You know, that took out a lot of the stress and angst and the kind of jealousy and anger that can develop in some bands.
Sure. And I want to, you know, wish you condolences on the loss of Neil Peart, who fought a courageous battle with brain cancer for, over 3 years and passed away a couple of months ago. I mean, you guys played together for over 40 years. You all were like brothers.
Yeah, we were. We were beyond brothers. It was more like we were, you know, we'd been in a war together, and we had this connection that would, even when we didn't see each other for months, or, you know, it was like we just left, you know, the day before, and we picked it up where we left off. It was always like that with us, and we always stayed in touch, and I'm in touch with Geddy regularly. Before this whole COVID-19 pandemic situation happened, you know, Ged and I would see each other every week. We'd go for dinner or at least talk to each other. It's been a little crazier now because of this whole thing and this adjustment that we've made these last few months, but we're still in touch, and we'll always have that friendship right to the end of our days.
I mean, do you miss performing? Do you think there's any chance that you and Getty will do some concerts together?
I miss performing in its essence. Get on stage playing, especially when you're really in good shape, you've rehearsed and you know everything, and you know it's effortless. I do miss that aspect of it. I don't miss the touring. The only thing, the touring, that I miss is not playing golf every day in a different fantastic golf club. But the rest of it, sitting in a hotel room, being away from my family, being away from friends, I mean, it's a price you pay. And when, in a whole scope of things, it's not that great a price for the return. But still, after 40 years of being away from your family, particularly, it becomes difficult. And after now, it's been almost 5 years since the last tour, I can't say that I really miss it at this point. Maybe a year or two after we stopped, I probably missed it more. But I've settled into it now, and I quite like my life and what I'm doing, and I keep active in music, and I'm so in love with golf during the summer, and I'm close to my family. It's a very good balance for me.
Do you guys ever talk about maybe going back on stage?
Not really. It's been difficult. You know, after Neil passed in January, I've played very little guitar. I don't feel inspired and motivated. It was the same thing when his daughter died in a car accident in 1997. I didn't really play for about a year, and I just don't feel it in my heart right now. Every time I pick up a guitar, I just aimlessly kind of mess around with it and put it down after 10 minutes. Normally, I would pick up the guitar and I would play for a couple of hours without even, being aware that I'm spending that much time. So I know it'll come back. And I think Getty, working on his book for those couple of years, he was so involved in that book, which is, by the way, a fabulous book. When he finished it, he went on a tour for a year promoting it. You know, every time I spoke to him about getting back together, it was like, when I get through this, and then always something comes up, I guess. And I don't know if the motivation is there for us to really do anything now. We're certainly proud of our track record, and we still love music, but it's different now.
Sure, I'm sure. Alex Lifeson, the legendary guitarist for Rush, joining me, passionate golfer, and you all had to have been aware of how deeply your lyrics connected to your fans, Alex. I mean, Rush was often referred to as the thinking man's band. What was the process like? I mean, did you have the melodies first, then put the lyrics to it, or vice versa, or what was it like?
Well, right from the beginning, when Neil joined the band, neither Getty or I really wanted to write lyrics. That was a huge, obstacle for us. So we broached Neil about it. I mean, we could see that he was a reader. He read constantly on the road. When we first met him, he always had half a dozen books with him, and he just plowed through them. So we thought, maybe he'd be interested in writing lyrics. And we asked him, and he said, I hadn't thought of it, but yeah, I'll give it a whirl. And of course, it was a great decision. It took the pressure off us, certainly. And he became a great writer, not only of music lyrics, but of the books that he published as well. And I think he was a very, very intelligent guy, very thoughtful. He had a broad knowledge of a lot of things, and he had strong opinions. And when he started writing lyrics, I'd say that, he wrote metaphorically about placing things in the future in space or in the past, and that sword and sorcerer sort of thing until the kind of the late 70s. And then he started writing in a more observational mode, commenting on things around him, relationships, global issues, and things like that. And he wrote it in such a way that I think readers could really grasp his meaning, but at the same time develop their own ideas about what the songs mean. And that was a great thing for any fan, because then they have their own interpretation of what the song means to them. And at the end of the day, that's what the important thing is. You can have your own idea of what it is, but if someone has their idea of what the meaning is and they hold it true to their heart, you know, then that's a very personal thing. We, Getty and I, always were focused on the music, so we always wrote the music, and Neil always wrote the lyrics. That gave us a three-way division in the songwriting as well, and it made it easy for us to be fair about how we were processing, you know, the publishing end of the songs that we were writing.
What a winning combination, really. You all were so fearless, which is, you know, which I think was a key. So back to golf. When you play golf, you know, you have to be really relaxed and mellow, right? But when you guys were on stage, you had so much intensity. Every night, it was like, you know, having the intensity of a game seven, right? So how difficult is it for you to transform from that onstage personality that you brought all the time to, like, that calm and cool persona that you really have to be a good golfer?
Yeah, there are similarities. I think before a show, you arrive at the gig, there's a sound check at 4:30 till 6 o'clock, and then there's sort of that dead period from 6 o'clock or 6:30 till showtime, which was usually around 7:30. So you had an hour to just sit back, and quite often we would read or get on your iPad, or always a half hour before the show, I would warm up. We'd all actually have our own rooms and warm up before the show for a good half hour before. Walking down the hallway up to the stage set the tone really for the way you needed to feel emotionally before going on stage. And that walk was always just exactly that. I had my in-ears in my ears, my monitors, so I couldn't hear anything around me. My pack was not turned up yet. So it was a quiet walk to the stage, and that, I think, it just got your heart rate down. It made you kind of more settled into what was coming, because the next 3 hours, it was all about intense concentration. A lot of times you don't notice the audience. You're so, you know, so involved in the concentration of playing those crazy songs. And there are a lot of notes in Rush songs,
right?
And you want to play them in the right sequence and efficiently. So it became that was the most tiring thing, I think, of performing live. It wasn't the physical part of it; it was more the mental drain. And you came off stage really exhausted in that way, particularly if you had a really, really good night, or sometimes even if it wasn't a very good night, that made it even more difficult.
Right. So I can't imagine, like, how you turn that off when you're playing golf just to be calm and cool. But gosh, Alex, I could talk with you for hours, but we're out of time. So
Okay. Thank
you so much, Alex Lifeson of Rush. Hit 'em straight and keep playing, man. It's great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure, and thank you.
Thanks so much. What an honor to talk with legendary guitarist Alex Lifeson of Rush, Hall of Famer, pilot, artist, golfer. My thanks to Alex. My thanks to Mike Nichols, Chief Business Officer of the Symetra Tour, to Ed Arzuman in the studio. Talking Golf was brought to you by Travelers Insurance for auto, home, and business. Travelers, it's better under the umbrella. Stay well, stay positive, stay safe, and I will talk to you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann Liguori.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.